Originating from a secret underground bunker buried deep in the heart of Chicago's North Side, two fans dare to defy the laws of man to bring you a podcast about the South Side hitmen, the good guys who wear black.
There's a sense of pride. There's a sense of purpose.
Azagian, by far. He was my favorite player.
Well, all time, it's Paul Konerko.
I love the hot dogs. I love the grilled onions. And
I can't believe it's been 13 years. 13 painful years.
Because good guys wear black. Good guys talk back.
Hey Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, episode 40. I am Nick Morawski and we are recording on Sunday, October 6th, 2019. This is a fan-centric, blue-collar Chicago White Sox podcast. If this is your first time with us, welcome. And if you've been with us since the beginning, welcome back. We really appreciate that. You can find this podcast anywhere you find podcasts. Go ahead and subscribe, and every new episode will show up in your inbox, even during the off-season. Folks, the dust has settled on this 2019 season for the Chicago White Sox. Going to talk about what happened, what could have happened, and of course some of those preseason predictions of mine and some of the experts throughout the country, one particular from this city, and how they fared with their MLB forecasts. So state of the Sox here. Sox finish 72-89, third place in the AL Central, 28.5 games back in that AL Central, 23.5 games back of the wild card. Sox were 38-37 in the AL Central this year, one game over 500, which is pretty remarkable. Sox were 30-46 last year in the AL Central. 30-46, 16 games under. So huge swing there. You know, the Sox increased win total by 10 games overall. They only won, of course, 62 games in 2018. But if you really look in that division, and we've talked for a while, and I'm sure you folks have talked, you know, with fans at the game, friends of your Sox fans, baseball fans in general, you have to win in your division. And if it's in football, you got to win in your conference, in your division. You've got to win against the teams that you see most of the time throughout the summer. And this Sox team, you know, they have not done very well in the AL Central. And it was so good to see above 500 record at 38-37. You know, this week, thinking about with the playoffs going on throughout Major League Baseball, and of course very exciting to watch, especially a Cubs-less playoffs, get a little nostalgic about the 2005 team and actually the 2008 Chicago White Sox team. On Friday, this past Friday, October 4th, it marked the 14th year to the date, 14-year anniversary of Game 1 of the ALDS. White Sox, Red Sox, our Sox pounded the Red Sox 14-2. I was lucky enough to be at that game. It was and continues to be the most electric, exciting sporting event I've been to live, and I've been to some exciting games here in this city, Bears, Blackhawks, what have you, and boy, that game one of the ALDS in 2005, that place was rocking, and leaving that game with a 14-2 victory, and swept the Red Sox, and went ahead and took care of business against the Angels, lost one game in that series, and of course swept Houston. The tone was set in that game one, and just remembering that this past week, and 2008, you know, the last time the Sox has seen the playoffs was against one of the teams that are playing right now, the Rays. It's been a while, and it was on the heels of that that blackout game. So, thinking about the Sox and their previous playoff journeys, as we watch the playoffs right now, and thinking about what could be as the Sox enter this offseason with that 2020 target as a competitive year, and folks like Hahn and Renteria have gone on record recently as saying this is going to be a competitive year. So exciting to be watching the playoffs going on. You're thinking about previous Sox appearances and longing for the White Sox to be back in, and I'm right there with you. And some of the things that have happened this past season, especially on an individual level, will get you excited about a possibility of the Sox being in postseason 2020. And you don't have to look too much further than Tim Anderson. Offensively, unbelievable. I mean, he jumped almost 100 points in his batting average. He wins the batting title with a .335 average. You know, we talk about his defense. You know, I'm not gonna harp too much on that right now. But what he did offensively, and really what he predicted he was going to do in spring training, by putting this team on his shoulders, and it was so exciting to watch, battling through some of the injuries and coming away with this batting title is a huge deal for the Sox and for fans of the White Sox. And not too far down on that average list is Yoan Moncada, and he finishes with a .315 average. So you've got Tim Anderson and Yoan Moncada finishing in the top 10 in the major leagues in average. And between the Sox and the Colorado Rockies, they're the only two teams that have players in the top 10 of batting average. You know, and I know batting average is starting to go away as a preferred stat. I get that. There are other ways to measure a hitter, but there's still awards being given out for average, and it seems to be something that folks still pay attention to. I sure do. And to have two members of the Sox in the top 10 in average, nothing that we've seen since the 70s, that's pretty remarkable, pretty exciting. And Jose Abreu finishes as the AL RBI leader with 123, only three behind Rendon from the Nats for the MLB best. So you've got a batting title champ, you've got an RBI champ, and you've got, of course, Eloy Jimenez, leader in home runs and RBIs for AL rookies. 31 home runs and 79 RBIs for Jimenez, who spent several times on the IL this year. Imagine what would have happened if he finished a full season, but still, absolutely impressive with the totals that he put in after looking like in April and May, like he couldn't hit a breaking ball to save his life. He made the adjustments, he battled through the injuries. You know, his defense is his defense. We really hope that comes along, but he is not on this team for his defense. It is for his offense and the fear that he's going to put into this lineup with guys like Anderson, Moncada, and Abreu. So you've got Anderson winning awards, you've got Abreu winning awards, you've got Jimenez winning awards. Giolito was on his way, it looked like, maybe to a Cy Young candidacy. It didn't really go his way second half of 2019, but Giolito finishes in the top five in ERA, which is a huge deal because he finished dead last in ERA in 2018. So great to see Giolito bounce back, Abreu bounce back from an injury-plagued 2018, Anderson bounce back from the offensive output he had last year, and of course Moncada bouncing back from what he had was a very troubling 2018 season, not only with his strikeouts, but with his average, and you know, he couldn't hit a breaking ball to save his life, and you know, he just took way too many pitches. To see him aggressive, the swing looks outstanding. He is a feared hitter, and individually, when you focus on those players offensively, this team really has something to build on and to use as a chip when it comes to talking to free agents. In the preseason, I was pretty bullish. I was able to go through the my Good Guys Talk Back show notes, and I found preseason predictions, and I had the Sox finishing 77-85, and at the All-Star break, they sure looked like they were on their way. So I was five off, as obviously the Sox finished 72-89. Now here is where I felt pretty good about my predictions. For home run leader, I predicted Abreu, which was right on the money. For average leader, I predicted Anderson, which was right there. And for our RBI leader for the White Sox, I predicted Abreu. Once again, bingo, bingo, bingo. Abreu finishes with 33 home runs. I predicted 35, so I was in the ballpark. Abreu finishes with 123 RBIs. I predicted 110, so he really surprised me, and I think he surprised a lot of folks by bouncing up to 123. I predicted a 280 average for Anderson, what was going to be the team high. If predicting 280, I had him jumping up 40 points, and he went ahead and almost jumped 100 points by hitting 335. Just unbelievable. So I felt pretty good about those individual predictions. Predicted a 270 average for Moncada. He shot up to 315, which was amazing. Would Moncada lower his strikeouts? He did by a lot. That was another prediction I had going for me. And less than 20 errors for Tim Anderson. Put the mark at 20 errors. He did not have less than 20. I predicted he would. He went all the way up to, I think, 25 or 26, which was a few away from his all-time at 28. He's got to figure that out. But, again, we are riding his offensive output right now, riding high and having a batting average title champ on the South side is pretty awesome. I was able to go back and... I saved some articles that I had found back in March and April of some of the predictions made by columnists and experts throughout the country and folks right here in Chicago from the Sun-Times and the Trib. And it was really interesting to see what some of the folks thought was going to be the output by some of these teams, and one individual specifically from the Trib, Paul Sullivan. He's a goofy guy. I try not to believe too much what he says, especially when it comes to the Sox. I just don't know if he's dialed in, and he's a nut, man. But wow, some of the predictions that he had, it's almost like, does this guy even cover baseball? He had Paul Sullivan for the Trib had the Sox finishing fourth in the AL Central and had Detroit finishing second in the Central. Unbelievable. Paul Sullivan had the Rockies winning the NL West, which obviously didn't happen. The Dodgers rode that division. Paul Sullivan had the Phillies winning the NL East. Phillies didn't even make the playoffs. Now, he did get the St. Louis Cardinals winning the NL Central correct, so you got to give Sullivan credit there. However, when it came to postseason, Sullivan was equally horrible. Paul Sullivan had Boston winning the AL pennant. Boston didn't even make the playoffs. He had the Phillies not only winning the NL East, but also the NL pennants. So we had a Boston-Philadelphia World Series. None of those teams made the playoffs, and then he had Boston winning the World Series. Ouch. Paul Sullivan. Difficult predictions there, sir. It's not easy. I'll tell you that. It's not easy making those predictions, but I thought those, I had to bring those up because I came across those. I'm so glad I saved those clippings because those were absolutely awful. So let's talk about some some actual events that have happened this past week since our last episode. The Sox went on the offense and fired our hitting instructor, our hitting coach, Todd Steverson, and the assistant hitting coach, Sparks. Steverson's been with us since 2014, so he wasn't a Renteria guy. He's spent six full seasons with the Sox, and you know, we kind of saw this coming here. We had an episode back in July. It was actually episode number 31. I found the notes in mid-July and started harping on this podcast about where the Sox were offensively, and they just were dragging. And sure, you had Anderson doing what he was doing individually, but as a team collectively, the Sox were just in the cellar in a lot of different categories. And we were calling for Steverson's head. It's a really difficult position. You know, you wonder about this firing, if it was more about trying to get a Ricky guy into the system, or, you know, is Hahn and company looking at, well, here are some younger guys we have on the team that came through Charlotte as a group, and here are a couple other guys in Robert and Madrigal that are going to be coming up in 2020, and we kind of want to get them all lined up and set in the right spot, and maybe Ricky had a bunch of input. I hope he did, and said, you know, I don't really like the direction we went. Let's look elsewhere. And you know, if you think about on the, you know, we just talked about at the beginning of this episode, what happened with Anderson career offensively, Moncada, unbelievable, Abreu, you know, and there's some others, like Lourdes Garcia for sure. And you got to say to yourself, if Steverson's looking at some of those numbers, he's like, I think my job's safe. We've got a batting champ. We've got an RBI champ. Look, Moncada was in the, you know, the top 10 in all of Major League Baseball. The jump he made, not only to decrease strikeouts, but, you know, increase his offense. If you look at some of those individual efforts, Steverson's got to be saying, I'm safe. And, you know, I'll be honest, when I first heard he was axed, I didn't think, you know, he'd been the first one to go. As I talked about in episode 39 last week, I thought third base coach Capra was going to be gone, maybe bringing Omar Vizquel into the fold. But, you know, when I started digging into some of these offensive numbers, boy, a change needed to be made. Now, okay, we've got the batting title champ in Anderson, and the Sox did finish eighth in all of baseball with a .261 average, which is the best showing under Steverson. The Sox have finished 16th, 22nd, 13th, 15th, 22nd again. So Steverson, again, is probably saying, hey, look, this team hit .261 collectively. You know, we finished eighth in the league. That's my best showing. We got the champ, the AL batting champ. I'm probably safe here. But then when you really dig, when you dig deeper, it's alarming. Sox finished 24th in OPS with a .728. Sox finished dead last in drawing walks. Dead last in all of baseball. 25th in the league, bottom five in RBIs. 25th bottom of the league in home runs. And they finished top six worst in striking out. So when you look at those numbers, and why is walks so important, okay? We're 30th right now this past season. Seven out of the top 10 teams, all right, that did the best at drawing walks, seven out of the 10 made it to the playoffs, which, you know, you get on base, you're going to win games. And these numbers, they show you the Sox aren't getting on base, simple as that. So you got players in Moncada, and you got players in Anderson that are skewing the numbers. You know, those two averages, a .335 and a .315, you know, are going to bring that average up. But if you take those two averages out, this team was rough offensively. So I can see, you know, I can see why the changes were made. And looks like they, you know, maybe are going to go with a guy like Mancino, who's came up from Charlotte towards the end of the season and was with the White Sox staff through September, I believe. He was a hitting coach in the Charlotte Knights program, and He's familiar with some of the guys that are on the current staff of the Sox, and he's very familiar with the guys that are going to be coming up in Robert Madrigal. So looking at that potential as a name, maybe they go outside the organization, but Sox have been, they've been hiring within as of late, and I'm wondering if that's a tradition that's going to continue. You know, it's clearly, it's just more than individual accomplishments. If individual accomplishments were all that were needed, Steverson and Sparks would still have their job. But, you know, Sox are 24th in runs. I mean, they just need to get on base. Drawing the walks is alarming, 30th. So Sox are bottom five this past year, finishing 2019. Bottom five in runs, OPS, walks, RBIs, and home runs. I mean, now, if you're following, you know, the playoffs, which I'm sure you are, and you got a team like Minnesota that's just getting spanked by the Yankees, and you're saying, well, what's the big deal finishing in home runs? You know, it doesn't really mean much. Well, it does. You know, I mean, you got to have a complete team, of course. Minnesota just doesn't have the pitching to go far, and we all kind of knew that. But, you know, you got to get on base. You got to do more than just have a couple individual high mark efforts. And to be bottom five in runs, OPS, walks, RBIs, and home runs, that's a lot. That's a lot. And especially since Renteria didn't bring this guy in, this wasn't a Renteria hire, it makes sense that a change is being made. So tune in to see how that develops. What was I excited about in 2019? I'm sure you guys can echo this. You've been following the podcast, following this team, which I'm sure you have been very closely. The obvious excitements are Mancada, Anderson, Aloy, and Gio. You know, what Mancada did by moving from second base to third base, playing very well defensively, and then it translating, translating offensively. He just felt the confidence from what he was doing on the field and then into the batter's box. From the left side, from the right side, he was, you know, being a little bit more, he was being more aggressive, you know, and I think that helped. You know, he might not have drawn as many walks as he did last year, but, you know, he kind of, I think, had a blueprint from last season of how pitchers were going to pitch him. And that's going to change, you know. Folks are going to go back from other teams, and they're going to look at the video on Mancada, and he's going to have to be smarter again in 2020 because it's not going to be the same way that they go about things. But, he's increased his value as a hitter. They're not going to be able to fool him. He's going to be able to make, on-the-fly adjustments. And that was just so refreshing to see. His swing is so smooth. Very excited. And Anderson, of course, you know, we talked about it throughout this episode and throughout this this season, his offensive accomplishments. And then Aloy, you know, to come in from the beginning of the season, and if you saw what he looked like in April and May, and, you know, hey, if they threw him a cookie fastball, he was going to crush it. And he had those home runs early in the year, but he really struggled with off-speed stuff, and it looked like he was almost guessing. And to watch him mature and evolve throughout the season and to do what he did as a rookie in terms of RBIs, home runs, playing on a limited basis with those injuries, you just hope that he takes that confidence, that blueprint into the off-season. He continues to work on that and figure out how to stay healthy out in the field. Excited to see Cease get his innings. You know, he, aside from that last start where he got scratched, it sounded like it was a hamstring situation, thankfully not a shoulder, elbow, arm. He took it on the chin some starts, a lot of starts. You know, but I think he's going to have a plan going into the offseason. He's got a great guy like Giolito to talk to. Both have been through Tommy John. You know, Giolito had a horrendous 2018. You know, as a young pitcher, he was able to bounce back from what he did in the offseason. He put the work in the offseason, and I could see Cease trying to mirror what Giolito did, and I could really see a bounce back for Cease. Excited that he got innings in at the big league level. Excited to see Abreu bounce back from a rough 2018, and for Abreu to also see what's coming here with this team in 2020. it's almost like, you know, you can't stop what's coming. And he sees it. He realizes it. He wants to be with his team. We need him as a leader. And love to see the numbers that love to see the numbers he put up in 2019. McCann, I can't say enough about this guy. This was a signing that raised an eyebrow maybe this past winter, but I didn't think much. And that's just because my expectations have been hit too many times by this White Sox front office. And credit to Han, you know, he took a chance on this guy and believed in this guy. And McCann, you know, he put up numbers, not only offensively but defensively. And I think he did a hell of a job with this young pitching staff. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do in year two with the Sox. Especially with a guy like Kopech and maybe a big fish we grab in the offseason pitching-wise. What I'm worried about, and I'm probably going to echo some of your worries if you're listening, worried about Lopez. He had an up-and-down season, and it felt like he was figuring things out. He made some changes after the All-Star break. And in the last few starts ending 2019, it almost looked like he wasn't there mentally, concerned about him. You know, I put him as maybe a fifth if you bring back Nova, which, again, I think the Sox are going to entertain. Worried about Lopez, really worried about pitching in general. Sox finished 22nd in ERA, gave up a ton of home runs, 10th most in all of the league. Gave up a lot of walks, 7th highest. Hitters were hitting .263 against the Sox. That's the 6th worst in the league. And 9th worst in runs given up and earned runs. So, you know, questioning Don Cooper, that's almost a whole nother episode. Maybe that's episode 41 of what's going to happen with Don. He seems like a Reinsdorf guy. He's been with the Sox since 2002. He's got a rough go at it. And I feel like Lopez is a big-time project to his and guys like Kopech and Cease, but really worried about these numbers pitching-wise, specifically Lopez. A little worried about how Robber and Madrigal are going to be phased in. My hope is that Robert gets a deal similar to Jimenez where he gets extended right away and he could start the season with the Sox, get acclimated as quickly as possible, especially if 2020 is going to be a contending year, which I think it will be. And then ultimately, I'm worried in terms of the front office that if this money is going to be spent, you know, I'm sure the Sox are going to be at the table. I'm sure they're going to say that, hey, we were involved in negotiations with this person or that person. And I can already hear Han and what he's going to say in his State of the Union at Sox Fest. You know, we were in this conversation, but I can't divulge anymore. You know, it's just the way things go. And, you know, but they got to start spending some money. I mean, that's an understatement. I'm ultimately worried that money's not going to be spent on what we need. And those needs, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, in future podcasts this offseason. But that's definitely a big worry of mine. You know, you got some arms that are going to be available. You've got some bats that could be available. Some of these guys that are playing it out here in the playoffs are going to be available. Now, of course, if they're not interested in coming to the Chicago White Sox for a variety of different reasons, geographically, family, what have you, but I hope it's not because we try to lowball, you know, and we try to get somebody on the cheap like we did last offseason. You know, I hope Jerry, and it's really up to Jerry, and there's a lot that's come out the last week. You know, if you've been following on social media and, you know, what Jerry has said 10 years ago about, you know, how to treat your fan base and how to spend and, you know, no shock. I mean, is it anybody shocked? I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf is Bill Wirtz 2.0, or maybe he was the same as Bill Wirtz. Maybe he's not even 2.0. He's just, you know, a different version. But I'm not surprised if those comments that Reinsdorf made are true. you hope they're not true. I mean, he seems to be spending money internationally. Of course, he threw a ton of money to a guy like Robber. Ultimately, my worry comes down to, will the money that we have be spent to get this team to where they need to be in 2020 and beyond? So we'll focus on that in future episodes this offseason. Again, next episode and future episodes, seeing what's going to happen with this MLB playoffs and what the Sox and the front office might be looking towards to get this team into those playoffs in 2020. Again, you can find this podcast anywhere you find podcasts. Go ahead and subscribe, and every new episode will come right into your inbox. This is Good Guys Talk Back. It's a fan-centric blue-collar Chicago White Sox podcast. I am Nick Morawski, and I want to thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, go Sox!